You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the fabulous 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder, please take this moment to silence your cell phones, and also there is no flash photography, please.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 54 Below podcast. My name is Kevin Ferguson, an assistant programming director here at the club, and our guest today is an award-winning musical theater composer who is no stranger to 54 Below. Most known for winning the Write Out Loud contest with his musical theater hit Little Miss Perfect, our guest also wrote music for the Sony Pictures film Lau Lau Crocodile and is a 2021 Jonathan Larson finalist. He returns to 54 in February with an encore performance of this show, The Black Boy Joyful Noise. Please help me welcome Jeriah Kwame. Jeriah, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here digitally.
All right. The crowd goes crazy. They're like, oh, shoot, it's Jeriah. This is so exciting. Listen, how you feeling?
I'm feeling really good. I had a wonderful holiday, New Year. It was rejuvenating. What about you? How was your holiday season?
Oh, festive. Festive and exhausting.
Oh, good.
But festive to say the least. Yeah. Good. I was able to stay amazing. In New York and just like hang out with my boo and all my friends. And that was really fun. But now we're in a whole new year.
Yes.
Like, isn't that crazy? We're in the future now. 2023.
Time is going so fast. 2023. To think that it's been 3 years since the beginning of this recent fiasco of COVID and everything is absolutely insane to think about. It's time flew, but also it feels like it's been 25
okay.
years.
And we're going to talk about the 25 years today because I love bringing artists okay. on this podcast and having COVID be one of the points we talk about, because just to hear how all the artists yeah. got through their own moment. But before we even get there, we got to tell the people who you are. For the people who aren't already your fans, I mean, you're so known. You have so many fans. You've done so many shows. You've written so many beautiful stories. But I'll let you tell the people. Who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, so my name is Jeriah Kwame. I am a musical theater writer and just writer of sorts and performer as well. I love all things story, music, community. That really excites me. I started music really at a young age, at first at church, and then found my way to the stage as far as R&B and neo soul hip hop, and then found Stephen Sondheim and was like, whoa, musical theater, what is this? And since then, it's been a whirlwind of creativity and experimentation and just like learning, playing by ear, literally. And yeah, now I'm working on a bunch of shows in development that are in different stages, and I'm just off the heels of working on Lau Lau Crocodile, mm-hmm. the feature film with Pasek and Paul. And yeah, things are really starting to kick off in my career, and I'm so blessed and honored to be in the greatest okay. city in the world making musicals.
Yes, sing so, it.
Yeah, that's a little bit about me. I
love that. Okay, so when did it start, though? Like, where did it start? Where are you from?
Yeah. So I am from Kalamazoo, Michigan,
oh,
which is a very small, yeah, I'm a Midwest boy, corn-fed through and through, and yeah, I'm from a small town called Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's a very homey, kind of liberal, artsy town, right there, smack dab in the middle of Michigan, pretty much, and yeah, I grew up kind of in church, singing in that way, and I was always taught that music is something that surpasses a sonic experience and can touch people and change people's mind, obviously, in the context of church. And so then musical theater ended up being a nice gateway of being able to express but also inspire. And I kind of started doing, my mom is a fifth grade teacher, so she would always be like one of the only black teachers at the school, so she would always be heading the black history programs, you know, in February. And so I would normally come and perform, and then this one year, when I was in middle school, and Smash was out, the TV
yes.
show Smash, where they're,
oh,
you know
yeah.
it.
Of course we know the iconic TV show Smash.
Okay, great. Yes. People don't be knowing. I be having to check people. And I was like, okay, what if this February I do a musical based on Martin Luther King Jr.'s life. And we produced it. And my mom was like, you know how to do that? And I was like, no, but I'm going to figure it out. And so my first musical I wrote when I was 13 was called Dream, a new musical. And it was about Martin Luther King Jr. And we produced it locally with a bunch of Black kids who had never done theater before. And I got to see my idea go from like a Google Doc to this stage in my hometown. And my community came and supported. And we sold tickets. And my family helped me put it together, and I immediately was just so moved and inspired by that experience of seeing my show on stage that I just couldn't stop doing it. And so since then, it was a lot of experimentation and producing things on my own. And then in 2019, I won Taylor Lautner's Write Out Loud competition for my song Little Miss Perfect, which was completely crazy. And then it went viral online, and that kind of happened right at the beginning of the pandemic, and then everything kind of launched, honestly, from there. And it's been crazy. It's been crazy and so fast. And yeah, I feel like I just
scrambled. That's perfect. No, I mean, it is a matter of just like time feeling like it's happening so fast. And you look back on like how you got here, it's just like so many years went by in between you writing the MLK show and you winning the Write Out Loud show. But for you, it felt like it moved so fast because it all just kept happening. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Ohio, and I also grew up, Midwest, come on. I grew up doing children's theater. So at a young age, being able to see like magic on stage come alive is so exciting. Yeah. I would imagine it's even more exciting when you're that kid it's your show that you saw come to life, you know? That experience I get now when I produce concerts at 54, when I have an idea and then I'm there the night of the show and I'm like, oh, I had this idea and now it's out in real life. I feel like that moment is so exciting, especially for creatives and writers. And I wonder, with you writing songs, do you know ahead of time that they're gonna work? Like, how did you feel about the one that won the Write Out Loud song going into the contest?
So that is a great, great question. And that actually speaks to a point I was going to make when you were talking about the beauty of, you know, giving up the show and seeing it come to fruition and knowing that you created it. There's a transitive property, I would say, of you as a writer, you really do have to let go of your... I worked with Craig Carnelia. I'm rambling, but I worked with Craig Carnelia, this amazing composer. I did this Johnny Mercer songwriting project, and he was one of the master teachers. And he said that like writing a song is creating an object, like you are creating something that belongs to you. And like even though it's not necessarily something that can be physical, it is like something that belongs to you. It's your intellectual property, and there's something that happens when you have to give it away in a way, and when it becomes something that belongs to other people. And that can be the horrifying part, but that can be the most beautiful part of realizing that you put your soul into something and then you have to give it up. And to answer your question, a great example of how it's not, I had to realize it's not about me, was Little Miss Perfect. I wrote this song in 30 minutes in a practice room while I was in college. It was for a charity project I was doing at the time, and I submitted this big folder to Taylor of all what I thought were my best songs, and it was like maybe 12 songs, and Little Miss Perfect was not originally in it. After I had submitted, like a week later, I had coincidentally wrote the song, and I was like, oh, Taylor actually would maybe sound good on this. Maybe I'll throw it in the folder, because I had done like a Google Drive folder so I could update it afterwards. And so I did that, and then time passed, and when I found out that I had been picked, and she was like, you should be very proud of your song, Little Miss Perfect. I was initially like, what? Like that song, that like poppy, kind of more fluffy, upbeat song out of all this, what I thought was like grueling art that I had put in this folder. And so I was like judging the song in that way. And then this transitive property, giving it away, and once it went viral, and I got flooded with comments and thousands of comments from people all over the world saying, hearing this song is what made me come out. Hearing this song is what made me not take my own life when I was in a really dark place. And I've had really young people reach out to me saying some heartbreaking things, but mostly amazingly inspiring things about what this song means to them. And that is when the song, to me, really meant something more, was to see what it meant to other people. And I think that's the beautiful part of being a writer.
Yeah, that is. I feel like that is so beautiful to be able to create something that, in a way, saves people. You know, you're like a hero with your art.
Oh, thank you.
And that's so exciting. Now, when you're writing your stories, you are coming from like a creative storytelling place. What would you say is the genre of most of your storytelling? Are you out here trying to give motivational music, or are you trying to give a horror movie that has this deep metaphor to it? Like, what would you say your brand of sound is?
So, you know, that is right now, I am working on so many. I'm lucky enough to have about 5 or 6 shows like in development,
yes,
going through production right
on.
Now that are under reps. I'm so excited to be able to share a lot of it, but they're very different. I have one show that is it's like a prequel to a Shakespeare story, is what I can say. And it's being commissioned by Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and I'm working on that. I'm actually going to Chicago next week for a second workshop. So that one is like completely different. And then I'm working on a couple of movie to stage adaptations. And so there's that, and that's interpreting someone else's work and interpreting another IP. And then I have a musical based on that song, Little Miss Perfect, that went viral. And that is kind of been my passion project, and I've actually been able to write to an audience in a fan base that already exists. And so for that, there's this layer of like the demographics of the people who like are a fan of it, and trying to make sure that their interests are represented in while keeping it as diverse as possible. Mm-hmm. And so the music has to be poppier and more commercial. And so I would say that less than I have any sort of genre or topical preference or tendencies, I feel as though the storytelling that I'm drawn to has a sense of like some sort of cerebral quality sense of some sort of uplifting out of our normal reality and either going. I think I'm inspired a lot by Into the Woods and in these moments where the show stops and we go into these fairy tale characters' heads and we understand more deeply why they made such a simple decision. Mm-hmm. That I think embedded itself into my mind. And now I'm always trying to find ways to like have that moment with the audience where you zoom into someone's mind, or you zoom into someone's heart, or you zoom out to a bigger macrocosm metaphor. And I'm always interested in finding ways to not be so literal and use music and storytelling to conjure thought and emotion in a way that feels, interesting and fun. And I like to be inspired by the world and research and learn about different cultures and different music styles maybe that I haven't written before, and bring that to the pieces as appropriate. So just a little bit of everything, honestly.
I like that. I mean, you mentioned neo-soul and Sondheim earlier. So that's just a mixture that I feel like Broadway musical theater needs. You know what I mean? I feel like the brain of somebody who knows neo-soul and show tunes, it gets me excited of what that would sound like. Now, when you say neo-soul and Sondheim, you said Into the Woods, but who neo-soul-wise or outside of musical theater, music genre, do you feel like you're really inspired by?
So I guess like I'll go through the time periods. Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald are very big for me. And then we can move forward a little bit. And I'm trying to go linear. Mm-hmm. Michael Jackson is big for me. Luther Vandross, Whitney Houston. I mean, Erykah Badu. Artists like Kim, I really love Jill Scott. Mm-hmm. More recently, Chloe and Halle are amazing to me. Beyonce, of course. Destiny's Child, the 90s era of pop icons. I'm just really inspired by Black culture and finding ways to heighten the things that are so embedded in our culture and that we know how to appreciate, and not just make it commercial, but bring that culture into musical theater. Because I think a big thing of it is there hasn't been that many Black composers to bring our sound to Broadway in a modern way. And so I look forward to being able to find ways to work this inspiration into all my pieces, not just pieces that are topical to one thing, but like, you know, other styles of music, they are embedded in the Broadway canon. Like, we have those iconic 60s Elvis rocks, which, I mean, let's be honest, Elvis is also doing Black music. But the point that I'm making is, like, there's not been a lot of opportunities for Black artists to pay homage or do references to our niche sounds in musical theater. And so that's something that I'm always finding avenues to do, because I think it's so important that we have not only representation as far as people, but also references
and the sounds and in the lyrics,
the sounds,
the stories. Yes. See, I'm excited. And listen, and I'm most excited for the Black Boy Joyful Noise in February. Okay, you're bringing your show to the 54 in February. Talk more about Black Boy Joyful Noise.
Yeah, so Black Boy Joyful Noise, this will be the encore performance. I did it for the first time August 5th last year. We had a lot of amazing talent. It sold out. It was so fun. So basically the night is... Oh, and we're doing it again. Look at me, not plugging my own show. We're doing it again February 27th at 9:30 p.m. at 54 Below. And it's going to be amazing. It basically is just projects, songs from different projects, standalone songs, pop songs that I've written. There's really no theme. I called it Black Boy Joyful Noise because I'm like, that's exactly what it is. Like, it's just my favorite music that I've written right now. The music that I find people enjoy the most. And I'm just trying to like create a cohesive night of like good sonics and like important messages, but also like, you know, subtly plugging some of the projects I have coming. But yeah, it's gonna be fabulous, and we have a really exciting lineup that's building. We don't have it all set yet, but it's gonna be something you don't want to miss. So if you can, please come check it out.
No, they gotta come check it out. I mean, you are on a track record that you're just getting bigger and bigger every year. I mean, like you said, from 2020 to now, it's been kind of like night and day for you. Meanwhile, a lot of people's 2020s were like uneventful or dramatic in a negative way. Yours was very eventful and dramatic, kind of in like an exciting way. You want to speak more on that?
Yeah, it was very that. So for context, so this is the full thing. March 2020, I had moved to New York from Michigan. I had saved money finally. I was like, I'm finally going to do it. I'm going to take that bold leap. This is after Limits Perfect had come out, but it hadn't reached the height of what it was going to be. So I didn't really have anything major, finite. I was just, you know, making that bold move. So I moved March. And as we know, March of 2020 is when everything happened. Thankfully, I was going month to month in Bed-Stuy. Mm. So by the 19th, on the 19th day, when a lot of crazy stuff had happened, I was like, I think that my spirit is telling me I need to go home and that I'm going to regret staying here and being stuck here if this somehow gets worse, which seemed so far-fetched at the time. But then, sure enough, I went back home to Michigan for what I thought was going to be a couple months, and everything fell apart. So there I was in Michigan, and it was just really depressing. It had been my life goal. I had finally taken this bold leap, and this was like the worst case scenario. Like so many people, I'm sure, felt when they were being brave at that time when the world decided that bravery was stupid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so then it was like hopeless in Michigan. I had gotten into the Johnny Mercer songwriting project, which is this thing that's supposed to happen. It's a songwriting intensive that's supposed to happen at Northwestern. But they were like, we're still doing it, but we're doing it digitally. I was like, this is also the height of George Floyd, as you know. So like being Black at that time was a very dark time. Like the world's falling apart. Black people are getting murdered. It's being recorded and posted online. You're stuck at home getting like, it was a lot. And so I did the Johnny Mercer project. It was life changing. And really through that, I met some of the most amazing mentors like Andrew Lippa and Stephen Bray, who wrote The Color Purple and has written for Madonna and is just amazing, has become an amazing friend, both of them. And Lindy Robbins, also now an amazing friend, one of the hit pop songs. She wrote Skyscraper by Demi Lovato, Classic by Jason Derulo, Cinderella from Cheetah Girls 2, which is the one that I died over. Honestly, her resume, look her up, Lindy Robbins. Look up all these people, but Lindy Robbins specifically, because she's written so many songs that you know. Anyway, and Craig Cornelius. So through that, all of a sudden, I was meeting people I've looked up to my whole life. I had meetings. I ended up signing with a publisher and getting a publishing deal. I got an agent. I started working, doing stuff for regional theaters, and it just kind of tumbled, and I did a bunch of jobs, and I did programs, and I really can't even trace anymore where it all happened. It was just like it all, and it's still mm-hmm. happening. It's just all happening, and I'm not really able to keep track of like exactly how it happened. But yeah, it was juxtaposition of the world falling apart, everyone being heartbroken, and me too. But at the same time, all your dreams are coming mm-hmm. true. And so it was a really dysphoric experience that I think just made me appreciate my like life in mm-hmm. general more. Like and made me realize like, you know, life has seasons and you have to live in each season, because had I not had all the pain I had earlier in my life and the heartbreak that I've had, I couldn't write these yeah. songs, you know?
Right.
And so to be able to celebrate a lot of the trauma and a lot of the things that before were holding me back in this dark time, and use that to lift up people. I mean, it's like the best. How could you have a better
yeah,
job?
Yeah, you took that broken heart and you turned it into art. You know, I was told Ooh. That. Well, listen, I can't quote me on that. That was a professor that gave me that.
Oh, you plagiarizing?
Yeah, a professor from college gave me that. But I definitely took that day, and I have never forgot that professor who said that.
Wow.
Because I think a lot of people unintentionally are taking that broken heart and turning it into art. And just hearing, you know, your wow. process and your journey, you had a lot to be motivated from. Instead of sitting in it, you used your given talent, you know, and now it's just working for you. And it just is a reminder of lean into what you know, lean into what comes natural to you. My thing is, when these yes. songs are coming to you, what if you're like out at a grocery store, or if you're like out walking outside on the street, what do you do when you get inspired by a song and you gotta like, do you hold on to it, or do you gotta like stop and write it down then? Like, what do you do?
It really depends. I think me being like neurodivergent is very helpful as a writer, because I'm able to like keep ideas and like build, like I'll have songs. For example, Little Miss Perfect, I can say I wrote it in 30 minutes, but what I mean when I say that is I sat down at the piano and wrote it down for 30 minutes. I had like the melody like in my head for a couple years of the chorus, like na 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 na. Like I'll just have, ever since I was a kid, I would just like hum mm-hmm. stuff, and then I would not even realize I was making it up. My mom would be like, "What are you singing?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
Wow.
It popped in my head. And so like I will do that all the time, and I'll have ideas that are like ruminating, and then I'll if I'm working on a project, sometimes it'll come up of like, oh, that melody would match this idea. And so then I'll actually sit down. Normally it's not that I have to like stop while I'm out in the world. A lot of times it's like if I need to write down words or something, I might open a Google Doc or a Notes app and write down something. But I say that's rare. More so what it is I might get a melody or some sort of cadence in my head, and then I'll just take out my voice memo and like hum it, and then if I think it's as good like the next day, I might like, you know, try to workshop it a bit. But I'd say it really for me normally is like I sit down to write something and have to kind of get into it. I'm an actor too, so I think I lead a lot with improvisation mm-hmm. and like just kind of pretending like I'm the character and seeing like what I would say if I was in that given circumstance.
Yeah.
And
you just mentioned yeah. you're an actor. When you have your actor hat yeah. on, what kind of roles do mm-hmm. you like to find yourself in? Do you write the roles you want to be in, or is that different? Is it a whole different kind of vibe when you're an actor?
That's a great question. I don't know. I honestly, and this maybe speaks to why I want to be a writer, I have not found really any roles that I feel like, you asking that, I'm like, huh, what roles do I, and I'm like, I guess whatever roles people will cast me as, like my kind of default type of roles are like, I guess Benny and In the Heights, and like
okay.
maybe Aaron Burr. But then like a lot of these roles also come with a physical expectation of like, these are always like the tall, yeah. thin black guys who do these roles. And so I've never really, I guess Usher in Strange Loop has arrived,
right.
and that feels more like something that could represent me. But even that, in yep. a lot of ways, doesn't feel like me, yep. Even though it's like a great vocal placement. So it's just like, I don't know. That I think is why I want to write musical theater. It's because I'm like, I don't know. I think we need more people writing
yeah.
more diverse types of. And yeah, I am writing. When I write shows, a lot of times I find myself putting myself into elements of myself, not even just into the male characters, but like elements of myself into roles. And I'm always like, ooh, I'd love to be this part in my own show, which is how I know that I like the show and maybe I'm doing a good job. Because like, if I don't want to be in it, my theory is, if I don't want to sing it, if I don't want to be the
right.
part, chances are other people might not.
Listen, I totally get that. I totally get that. And the whole idea of not fitting into the very narrow box that musical theater and Broadway sometimes expects people to be in is very hard. I am very short. Well, I'm not very short. I'm just shorter than the average ensemble dancer boy. And I remember that was kind of my track when I first came to New York was, you know, dancer. So it was kind of just like a shock to move to New York and be so talented, you know, feeling so confident in your talent, but then realizing it's about physicality sometimes, or just like a appearance thing that you can't change sometimes with the harshness that this industry kind of like gives. How have you like handled that though? The rejection that just naturally comes with being an actor, being an artist, you know, pursuing musical theater careers at all, you know, rejection comes up often. Or do you feel like every door you've knocked on, they've opened? What's going on?
No, I've definitely had my fair share of rejection. And I think something that I do, I don't know, I think over time, I just kind of, something that I try to focus more on is when I get something, like, and this is a tip for anyone who's like constantly submitting, we can get lost in submissions, we can get lost in, it's really easy to get lost in like looking at people's, the little check marks in their bios, and it's like, oh, I need to get into this program and that program to be like all the people on the Jonathan Larson thing, and maybe that will mean I'll get John, you know, whatever. It's really easy to get in that toxic mindset. What I do is when I get something, and I get, or even if I just show someone something and get a compliment from someone I admire, I re-listen or reread whatever I sent. And freshly, while I'm in that mindset of you, okay, you got rewarded. This was given you. You got the thing. You got the job. You got the program. You're in. Now go back and listen to what you did to get it, because it can be easy to remember what you did to not get things, and then you end up editing yourself because you're like, oh, I didn't get this job when I did this kind of song, so maybe I shouldn't do that kind of. No, that's not true. Different people have different opinions. So it's better to look at when you get something. What did you do? And so I try to do that, and that really helps me not focus on the rejection, because if you're lucky, over time, you can look at the things that you got and the different levels of them and compare them to the things that you didn't get and go, I guess it just means different people have different opinions.
Yeah, it's really, you're not going to be for everybody, and, you know, that's okay. And, you know, the no's help, you know, motivate the yeses and make the yeses feel so much sweeter, you know? So I totally get that, you know, and I feel like you have so many yeses written for cabaret stage, full musicals, the silver screen. And I'm seeing now you even work with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus.
Yes. What? Yes. Andrew Looper brought me on.
So like, what is the most fun thing to write for? Is it the musicals? Is it the silver screen? Is it choral arrangements? Like what's the most fun for you? Because you've done it all. So I'm just trying to figure out what's the most exciting for you now.
I think the most fun will always be the sickening female sang Broadway big number. I like The Wizard and I, The Defying Gravity, The Moment in the Woods, The Daddy's Son. For me, that is what little me looked up to. In Smash, it would be Don't Forget Me. Know what I mean? Those moments where it's like, this is musical theater. And which I think can exist. The cool thing is that idea can exist in movies now. Mm-hmm. That can exist in some ways in pop music. If you think about like a really good Adele song, you know what I mean? Or Listen by Beyonce, which I guess is from a musical. So I that's probably the height for me, is those really iconic staple musical theater moments that like I grew up rewinding to that 1 second where that singer does that thing in her voice that you can't stop fixating on. Trying to write those songs for me is the funnest. And so Little Miss Perfect becoming one of those is really cool.
I would imagine it's very exciting. And now, you know, writing for projects like Lao Lao Crocodile, you get starstruck? You've said a lot of cool names on this podcast.
Yes.
Casually, though. So it gives, like, have you ever been starstruck by anybody, and who was that?
Yes. The biggest starstruck I've ever been was, actually, I was very surprised. I was at the premiere for Lao Lao Crocodile, which was a crazy day of meeting so many people. And I was upstairs in the after party, and I made some like off the comment. I was like making a joke with someone as they were passing by, and then I heard someone like say, "Oh, I saw that." And I look over, and it's Queen Latifah, and she's just like being so friendly to me, just like, "Oh, I saw your little moment," like also trying to have a moment with me. And I literally, it was humiliating, Kev. I literally, my jaw was, and I was like, "Yeah, hi," or something like that. And she just like made like the sweetest little face and was like, "Have a great night," and walked away. And I stood there like for, and it was Queen Latifah. Right. Like, it was insane. She is the celebrity I've met who was the most, I was the most starstruck. But I get starstruck by everyone. When I was working with Benj and Justin, Paul, Pascal and Paul on the movie and writing with them, I've had these, I would forget. They're so nice and they've become great friends, but especially at the beginning, I'd have these moments where I'd just be talking to them or something. And then I'd like remember, they wrote Dear Evan Hansen. Uh-huh. They wrote the... Wait, that's uh-huh. them. Wait, what?
I'm sitting right there.
And then you remember in one moment. And we remember in one moment. And then a lot of times, like, these people are so personable that, like, it's easy, honestly, to forget. That's how you know you're working with good people, if it is easy to forget all the things that they've yeah. done. And I feel really lucky that I... Pretty much all the experiences I've had with higher-profile people, they've been sometimes more personable than less high-profile yeah. people. So that's the cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. it definitely is always cool. I feel like, for me, the musical theater celebrities are always the most down-to-earth out of the yes. other brands or branches of entertainment.
Yes.
The musical theater celebrities are always so cool. It's just a different journey, I think, to become a quote-unquote celebrity in the musical theater world.
Yeah.
And when you meet those people and they're just so regular, not regular because they're amazing, but just down to earth.
Yeah.
You know, it can be a little shocking. Now, for you, though,
yeah.
you now have people who could potentially be starstruck by you. You know, younger generations, and they're, you said they're pouring into you with such nice words about your songs and how you're kind of like a savior sometimes. Do you ever go and talk to younger generations or do any workshops or anything like that? Or do you aspire to do something like that? Or do you feel like we're not there yet?
I have done things here and there. And when I have, it's been so emotional. I don't know. Seeing even not even just not there, because they haven't been starstruck, I would say. That's the cool part where I'm at now, is I feel like it's more so that they're like, "Thank you for like I'm trying to get my school like to do your show when it comes out. Like, I'm your fan right now. I know that you don't have that many fans, but I want you to know like I am your really big fan." It's more like that, which is so cool. And then it gets emotional because they'll be like, "I really want to." There'll be small town people talking about like what they want to do and how seeing that I came from Michigan makes them feel like they want to move to New York. And they're like, "Was it hard? Was it like, do you think that it's worth doing? Like, do you have any regrets?" And I just see myself in them. Because, I mean, you know, being from the Midwest, New York and
Broadway,
it doesn't feel like something that happens mm-hmm. for people. So I totally understand their disbelief of like, because I remember asking people who did it those questions, like, is it, can you really do it? Or is it kind of like you have to be picked out of the raffle, mm-hmm. you know? And everyone has, I remember people saying, you just have to really believe that you can do it and do anything that you can to make it happen. And that feels so like, you know, woo-woo. But that's what mm-hmm. I tell them. I'm like, for me, I couldn't, there is not one thing that happened. There's not one person. There's not one song I wrote. It was more so, I think, the energy that over the last 13 years of my life, I was putting into the work. So then the work, because I had to work into my work, because I had the time into the work, then when the right person saw it, then it was quick. But it takes all the, so it's been really cool to just like be that for people and to be able to be like relatable, like to talk to young black mm-hmm. people who are like, "There's no one who looks like us doing this. How are you doing it?" And I'm like, because there is more people than we think who look like us that are doing mm-hmm. it. That is a little bit of a misconception. Absolutely. Maybe they're not getting as much credit.
Yep.
But they are there, and it's important to find them and elevate them, you know, and join them. And so, Yeah, it's really cool, and it's the best part, is actually being able to pay it forward to the next little black, queer, neurodivergent kid in Michigan who maybe is going to do something crazy like try to write musicals.
Okay, something crazy like try to write a musical. But I do think there are going to be more, and they are being inspired by you and everyone else doing, you know, and having the same energy. There is a big push in, you know, black stories on Broadway right now, stories of color right now, and yes. I'm just so happy for this wave. I hope Amazing. It keeps pushing. I think it is, based off of what I'm seeing and working at 54. I do think there's going to be a whole new era of Broadway on its way, and Jiraiya, I'm pretty sure you're about to be part of that. I really do. I'm just everything you've already accomplished, you know, and that has happened to you, you deserve it. And you know what you're talking about. You know your stuff. You know how the aunties would say it.
Thank you.
But I just feel like, do you find yourself to be a mentor to these younger people? Do you have your own mentor? And if not, what would you, you know, if you're not mentoring anyone right now, just a blanket piece of like motivation to help them out, what would you say?
So I have, to answer all the questions, I do have mentors. I have quite a few. I'm lucky enough to feel like I do have a lot of mentors who are doing it and doing it big, and I'm able to text and call and meet up with if I have any questions. And I would love to be that for anyone. I don't currently have any mentorees, but I guess the biggest thing that I would say is to anyone who's trying to start writing, I guess I can only speak really to who's trying to write and trying to write musicals. You have to write bad songs to write good ones, which maybe feels like a metaphor for life. You got to have bad relationships to have that. Well, not necessarily. You don't have to have a bad relationship to have an amazing relationship. But once you've had a bad, quote unquote, bad relationship, you're able to see what you didn't like about the relationship. So when you find the next person, it's like, hey, if you're not doing that right. So we can do that with a song. You can write a bad song and it's just as valuable as that great song, because that great song really came off the stepping stone of all those bad songs and what you learned not to do or what to do. So I encourage people to, like, you're always going to listen to your favorite composers and listen to your little song and go, I am not nearly as good as them. That's a good sign. That means that you are not delusional. Mm-hmm. So, like, have your moment of acknowledging that you have somewhere to go and let it be just that. And don't judge yourself. Like, you're on a journey. You have to walk before you can run. You know, all those cliches. It's just true. You have to let yourself get better at it. And writing is hard and takes a lot of different skill and perspective and experience. So don't be too hard on yourself and create. Write. Yeah. When you have the idea, write it down. Yeah. Do it. It's
yes.
worth it.
All right, y'all. Yeah. Well, February 27th, 9:30.
Oh, my goodness.
Black Boy Joyful Noise with the one and only Jiraiya Kwame. I mean, I'm so excited.
Please come out.
They got to come. They're going to come. I mean, do you want to say anything else about the show other than come?
Come. Bring your family. Bring your friends.
What do they expect?
Be ready to jam out.
It's going
to
be a...
Expect a collection of things. We're going to have some live... it's going to be all live singing, but like I'm going to do some combination of some tracks to give like a full, like I'm going to do a couple hip hop songs and a couple more pop songs that need tracks. So we're going to have that. I'm going to have a violinist. We have some amazing talent, some amazing vocal talent, like Alyssa Ray, Danny Quadrino. We have so many people. I really don't want to like, we have to confirm some more, but we really do have a lot of amazing vocal talent, a wide variety of songs from musical theater to pop to R&B, but all leading with storytelling at its forefront and inclusivity at its backbone.
Yes. Okay. Come on, y'all. He knows what he's talking about. Jiraiya Kwame. Don't miss this show. Jiraiya, thank you so much for sitting down and kikiing with me
today.
Thank
you.
This is so fun.
This was amazing. You are so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. This was the fastest 30 minutes.
Oh,
of my life.
Yes. I love to hear that. Come on, friend. Yes. All right, everybody. Well, I am your host, Kevin Ferguson. It was fun chatting with you today, Jiraiya, and everyone listening. Thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to the 54 Below podcast. We will catch you next time. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to the 54 Below podcast, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.